All right, it's around afternoon of Friday, April 5. Got I think a really, really strong conversation with Andrew Martin. Andrew Martin, author of early work, 2017-18, and Cool for America story collection that came out in 2020. Also edited walkbook pages that I wrote with the Paris Review. But I really do think one of the strongest writers about intimacy, about the complications of intimacy. So smart, so funny. That's how I feel when I read Andrew Martin. I feel like he sets a bar on how intelligent and clever and funny and readable in a way where you're suddenly tunneled into an affair, some type of illicit encounter, which I think I kind of make the case in the pod. I think there's something about the illicitness. It doesn't got to be an affair, you know, explicitly an extramarital affair or an extra relationship affair, but you know, it's some type of secret sharing. It's that. I really think on some, you know, it can be good novels about anything. And maybe this is just my personal taste, but I think that's the reason, you know, I was joking how you had a blurb that said he was a male Sally Rooney, but I think that's the reason why Sally Rooney, for example, is so widely read. Because just on some lizard brain level, you know, if you kind of bring the reader in and then something happens where some kind of slightly secret intimate encounter is happening, that on a lizard brain level mirrors the excitement of reading, of encountering a book where it's got some type of, you know, or confiding in somebody. He makes the reader his confidant. One makes the reader your confidant. I think there's something to that. And a lot of the stories in Cool for America have, and it, so yeah, it could be like a thing that happened with a sibling or a parental thing. It doesn't just have to be about intimacy or some type of illicit sexual behavior, but Mary McCarthy, whose book we're talking about, her first book, 1942, The Company She Keeps. I say it in the pod, but that's what we're talking about. How we got into that. But all of her books, she's a damn investigator of, you know, intimate encounters. Every one of the six chapters are six stories that comprise a novel of Company She Keeps, kind of like six standalone long stories, you know, and it's kind of her, we get into the autofiction stuff, but every, you know, autofiction insofar as there's an element of her writing about, leaving enough crumbs to know what she's writing about so that there is part of the response is kind of like, whoa, can't she do this, you know, which is sort of a relevant question, you know, I guess if you listen to the pod, this thing I'm thinking about a lot, but I'd seen him recommend this book, and it made sense, and I wanted a reason to push it. It was actually, really excellent writer, Kira Baldwin, who passed away 3 years ago. She loved Mary McCarthy and wrote one of her last essays was on Mary McCarthy. I don't even bring this up on the pod, but this will be my secret for the podcast intro with the listener. And so, anyway, all the six stories, maybe I'll link that essay in the description, but all the six essays describe different encounters with different men. And she really goes in on herself and captures the complexity of those encounters really well. So I recommend that book, same as usual. First 80 is up on the, is now, is coming. And then there's, took a break, then did a Patreon hour, where it's a little more relaxed and less explicitly about the book, but chopping it up. I was listening to that back, that's funny as hell, you know, that's when the real gas. I'm doing the OnlyFans model for podcasts where, you know, no, I'm just playing, but that second hour, we're also just more relaxed. So if you want to keep listening, and I am going to stick to the weekly drops. There was a solo pod I dropped just on the Patreon last week. It was just a little unhinged. I was deep into my holy week, just dropping occult, esoteric knowledge on the track. I thought it was a little too real for the public pod, so I threw it up on there. But that's up there too. Here we go.
It's hot. My juju lasts.
I was wigging out last night because I was finishing the Mary McCarthy book, and then I was almost done going through Cool for America, and then I was just running. I think someone stole my early work, but that's actually a testament to how good it is, because that means, and I vaguely remember a couple weeks ago I was reading parts of it to somebody, and then I think they, and then I remember being like, no, I think I'm gonna part with him, like, don't take it, but I think they took it. So I do, but I remember
that makes me really happy.
No, it's actually true. The best compliment. It's absolutely true. I'm gonna email,
like, when you're in the bookstores and they keep like the Bukowski and the Kerouac like behind the counter.
Yeah, exactly.
People are stealing
exactly,
them too much.
Exactly. Or it's like how I never have a copy of Sarah book because I give it to her. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, that's funny.
I was gassing it to somebody, so I didn't have that one. But
no, for a while that was true because those Renata Adler books were like really hard to find.
Oh.
And so I would buy, like, anytime I saw a used copy of Speedboat or whatever the other one is, After Dark, I can't remember what it's called, I would just like give them to people. I was like, you gotta read this. And
you like Speedboat?
Oh, I love it,
man. So how did, what yeah, so I guess,
are we live?
Yeah, we're going. Just same as normal, just don't say anything like personal, right?
Great.
But yeah, here with Andrew Martin, the legend, author of early work and Cool for America. That's it. That's the only thing. Like, we just have to establish that there's a third thing. But how did, yeah, and the idea was, so yeah, I saw you write the thing at the end of the year, last year, recommending books, and you were recommending the Mary McCarthy book. And I guess for my own reasons, I just is one of those things that I'd had for a long time, and I wanted to read, and I was just curious about what you liked about it, what was your history with that book?
I really liked her criticism.
Okay.
And I always assumed I would love The Group because it just seems like the kind of book I'd be excited about. But I still haven't read The Group. I don't know. I'm like waiting for the moment or something.
Yeah.
But somebody meant, you know, it's like, I feel like she comes up, you know, and I like, she came up in some essay or some article by somebody, and I was like, all right, I gotta finally like read Mary McCarthy's fiction. And so I got that Library of America edition out of the library, and I was like, oh, I'll start at the beginning, start with the first book.
Yeah.
And I was just kind of shocked by how contemporary the voice felt and how intelligent and analytical it was. And I was like at year like 3 or 4 of like trying to write this book that's kind of a short story collection and kind of a novel and kind of trying to like thread the needle. And then like, I discovered that book and I was like, oh my God, here's like the person who like really figured it out.
While you're reading Cool for America or the one you're working on now?
No, the one I'm working on now.
Okay.
I guess, right, I had been thinking in those terms with that earlier book too, to some extent. But this one, I feel like the company she keeps is way more focused, and it's actually about this one, or it's like about like the company she keeps about this one character refracted through all these men mostly.
Exactly.
And it just felt like, oh, you can, I mean, I feel like when I read older books, it's always like, oh, you can do whatever the fuck you want.
Yeah.
Like, and there's a lot of silly rules and like commercial ideas put on what books are supposed to do now categorically. And then you read old books that just do whatever. And it's like, yeah, it's a novel, deal with it.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely that, but it's also, it's similar to your, because like, here's one way I was thinking about it, whereas like, I feel like with your books, and I think with what I'm interested in doing is like describing on some baseline level, like a lot of your stories have some element of, did someone say like you were like male Sally Rooney?
Yeah.
Someone said that. Yeah. And everyone's always trying to say that I'm like this like toxic mask, whatever they say about me. And I'm like, no, I'm male Sally Rooney. But the point I'm trying to make by that is I'm concerned with like, and things I like to read and things is like, just like in any type of intimate encounter. It doesn't have to be explicitly whatever, you know, just sexual, whatever, any kind of intimate encounter. And the nuances of what's going on and the, you know, different feelings, you know, whatever, just the nuances of what you can say, what you can't communicate, what you can't communicate. Yeah. I feel like that's what you're concerned with in your story. That's why you're, and that's why it's, I think you're right. Your writing is so readable and you're doing the same thing. And it's almost like how precisely can you describe those encounters and how nuanced and deep can you go in like whatever weird gaps are in between people. And I feel like Mary McCarthy takes that to like such a precise level and such almost a terrifying level.
Yeah.
Where like
the level of judgment is the level really of
judgment,
intense.
Self-judgment, other or like the Brooks Brothers suit story. It's like first I was like, okay, this is going to be my way to understand like, you know, a woman doing this and but you know, in this, and I'm going to understand about you know, I'm going to learn something about how women operate in this but these type of, you know, writing in this way. But if anything, some of the stories just left me more mystified or more terrified by like how quickly sometimes superficial the intentions are for engaging in an intimate encounter and sometimes how quickly they can change.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, even from that, like the very first story in there where like everything is capitalized and like almost the whole thing is like, found, it's like in quotes, it's like received language, it's like her level of self-consciousness,
right,
of the degree to which she's like enacting certain cliches of of sex or of hookups or of like romance in various ways is like, or marriage or divorce, that's what makes it feel so contemporary to me, is like the degree to which she's conscious of like how familiar some of these things are, and like that's part of her experience of that romantic encounter, is like realizing she's like enacting these like sort of romantic cliches but then also fighting against them, and then finding herself like, yeah, the Brooks Brothers story, she changes almost every hour her feelings about this guy. Like they're on this train together and she goes back and forth on whether she thinks he's like a total joke and loser or whether she's attracted to him or not.
Oh my God, my favorite part of that story. Before I say my favorite part of that story, when you're saying like cliches, you mean kind of like the archetype she's playing with, like she's in this, like in the first one, it's just about an affair, and she's with she has a husband,
the young man,
capital Y, capital M.
Yeah, yeah.
And is that what you mean, kind of?
Exactly. Yeah. And just the like, it's all spoken of in that way. It's like there would have to be a talk,
capital, the talk. Yeah.
And then there would have to be a scene. They would have to reconcile. And so she's like so aware that she's going through. It felt like kind of like Madame Bovary or something, you know, where it's like always aware of the ways in which this is like part of a script almost.
Yeah, I think aware. I think a thing that gave it the depth was like an awareness of like the social implications of what she's doing, and a level of like understanding of like, you know, the man in the Brooks Brothers suit, like, she's really explicit about that stuff. She'd be like, you know, I don't know, he wasn't attractive, he was this older man. It's like, it wasn't because he had money, it seemed like he had money, and then in parentheses she's like, well, not only because it's, you know, she's like,
well, she's horrified when he says like as a joke that he's a traveling salesman. She's like, oh my God, no. And it's like, oh, he's in steel, which is like politically disgusting, but at least like socially makes him like someone she's not repulsed by.
Right. See, that's the thing. I have no level
of awareness, or maybe, you know, I feel like I don't have that awareness of like the social tiers and the implications of it. And when she's bringing that in and then tying it to the political stuff that's going on.
Well, and she's like the bohemian.
Exactly. So she thinks of herself as a bohemian. Yeah, exactly.
Because she's part of the, like, you know, she's part of the little magazine circle of the 40s. You know, she's the of the N plus one of its day.
That story was so good too. Yeah. The magazine,
it feels like wildly just like the moment we're in. Like, it's crazy.
So that, yeah. So that story is called Portrait of. So yeah, every story is just basically a different encounter with a different man told from a different angle.
Yeah.
Sometimes where, and that story, she starts from his perspective, and there's, yeah.
But Portrait of the Intellectual or something.
Yeah. Yeah, what's that magazine? Is that Partisan Review that they're working at?
I think so.
It's the Partisan Review.
Yeah, and then he like ends up at Life, basically, I think.
Right,
you know,
okay.
When he sort of gives up.
Yeah. Oh, it was Life, yeah. She's called it The Liberal or something like that. She called it The Partisan Review.
The Liberals, yeah, The Partisan Review, I think.
Yeah, I wonder if like, was that, now everything that I'm reading was getting mixed up in my head. I wonder if you said something like that in this book.
I mean, it was so funny because I felt like reading that book, not to toot my own horn in any way, but like it just felt like a kindred spirit. Because I was like, I can't believe I haven't read this, because I felt like I was like ripping it off.
When I read both of your books in pretty quick succession last fall, probably, or last summer into the fall, I was thinking of the archetype of the Leslie character.
Mm.
And the archetype of like the, yeah, I mean, kind of like the Margaret, kind of like a Margaret Sanger character who's like sort of really cares. Yeah. Kind of really kind of running into different relationships and to escape something. But is also kind of like weirdly a guy's guy at some points. But
yeah.
But then kind of.
I mean, I think the thing that I always like.
What's the name of that archetype?
Well, I think the thing I've feared about Leslie, and like, I feel like she's like the character who haunts me most out in the world or something, is like, I feel like at worst she becomes like the cool girl,
right?
You know, from the Gone Girl rant, where she's like sort of a male fantasy or something. But I feel like I gave her so many of my own qualities as a person and thoughts and feelings that I feel like whatever she is, she's, you know, like Flaubert again, like she's me.
Right,
so
right.
I don't know, whatever those good and bad qualities are, I feel like that's part of it. But also she's a version of so many of the, like, you know, like brilliant women I've known, especially in like the New York world, who are writers and also like kind of just like crashing through the world in ways that I like deeply admire.
right. But possibly, yeah. I mean, I think with the end of the Mary McCarthy book in that last, like, it's also like, so, and I think that stuff was really, I'm pretty sure that was pretty scandalous, like describing being on a train, meeting a man, having casual sex on the train.
I think that story was like a lightning rod. It was a really big deal, yeah.
And then, but then at the end, she kind of goes full therapist mode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's just like analyzing herself. Did you feel like it was that with the Leslie character? So yeah, in early work, so how did I'm so mad I don't have the damn copy, because I remember when I was reading early work, I was like, yeah, I want to ask you a question, but I feel like I should wait a little bit longer. So then maybe I can clip it and put it after the paywall, because it might be a little inflammatory. I don't want to bring it.
That's exciting.
Okay, but do you think the reason why you're writing, because like you're writing within 5 pages of early work, there's like a new like illicit love interest that's introduced, and how, and just combine that aspect combined with the I remember what the line was from. It was from an essay that someone just sent me, but combined with how funny it is and how good the pacing is, it's like you're kind of in. My brain's kind of in, mm-hmm. you know. And all these are these kind of illicit or slightly secret affairs. Do you think there's something about the what's happening in the like brain that makes fiction good? Fiction good. Because it's kind of a secret thing. You're like reading into the person's the author's brain,
yeah,
right? That
yeah.
That somehow mirrors like the what would be I don't know the. It's similar to like an illicit communication or illicit. Do you think there's some to that?
Yeah, like the excitement of like finding out something you're not supposed to know, or of like seeing something. Right. I mean, yeah. It sounds a little like. Romantic or high-minded to be like, well, a good book should be like an affair, like, you know, you never know. I like my women like a, you know, whatever. Yeah. But like maybe there is something to that, right, where you like you're like encountering a new thing, a new person, and you're like hoping that they'll bring something exciting that you haven't seen before,
but you're also confiding in, like, it's like you're feeling you're being confided to. This is just my is my theory to justify my like unhinged writings.
Deeply confessional writings.
Deeply confessional, trauma-imposing writings. So maybe that's not right. But okay, you know, if it's completely abrasive, it's not going to be good. But,
right.
But some of that, I wonder if...
I think so. I mean, I feel like with early work especially, it was a much longer book, but it always started... The goal was always for it to be like a kind of like built-for-speed kind of book. Like, yeah. that just like... You're in it, and I sort of found that voice, and I wrote the first draft like pretty fast, and I was like, "Oh, I got this voice." Late 20s. I think it was published when I was like 31, 32, so I probably started writing it a few years before that. But I feel like it was like after years of like writing stories and like pieces of novels that I couldn't figure out, like. That one, I was like, kind of like brought like everything. Yeah. I was like, I'm just gonna write like everything I know about being like an idiot in your 20s, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm gonna like just like try to like get it down. And so like the original draft was like thousands and thousands and thousands of words longer, with like way more like episodes of but they got repetitive. You know, it's like they drink too much, they do this, they do that. Like,
yeah,
and so I kind of like reduced it to like the 10 most important times that happened.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
what else happens in your 20s? I don't know.
Yeah, no, yeah. But yeah, but okay, whatever. Forget what's inflammatory or not, but because I mean it's not just that you admire Leslie or you're promote, you know, like that's how early work is, right? It's like a little bit of an affair, and it's a lot of it's like. You want to have a drink? You want to have a smoke? You want to go out, do this? Yeah, let's do that. Let's, you know, kind of saying yes, saying doing everything, you know, going with everything. That's kind of how, Mary McCarthy is too. Mary Sanger is, right?
Where she's always like, down.
She's always down. And, but she, you know, what she, yeah. But then at the end, obviously, there's some gnarly scenes about her, you know, her dad. Because she was also an orphan, right? Both of her parents died in the pandemic.
Yeah.
That's a crazy thing.
Yeah.
And then... I don't know. Okay,
I'm nodding, but I actually don't. I forget her biography. Yeah, but I believe it. If it's
true. both of her parents died, and so then she was raised by her grandparents, and then she went to this one's Memories of a Catholic Girlhood.
I know. Laura, my wife, loves that book, and I've been dying to read it.
Yeah, I just read the intro to it like a million times. Because it's the most crazy like autofiction statement. It's like literally just a statement of autofiction. Like, this is obviously my life, but also I couldn't remember everything that happened. So if I'm at the school and they're like, you know, the nuns are talking about this, it's not like they were actually saying that. I can't remember, but it seemed like a good thing. And then she's like, everyone keeps questioning whether I had a Jewish grandmother. They think it's fiction just because I'm a fiction writer. I did have a Jewish grandmother. It's so crazy. It's so crazy.
I love, and the introduction, I'd forgotten the introduction to The Company She Keeps until I just read it, that like opening page that's like, well, like some may note that the character is a little bit different in each of these stories, but like, you know what, that's just kind of the way it is sometimes. And you're like, okay.
I don't think I had that in my version. That's hilarious.
It's like this one page sort of
yeah, I never had that
thing that's like, and sometimes one is an I and sometimes one is a you and sometimes one is a she, and like, you know, that's just that's just how it is. You're like, all right, like, don't worry about it. Thanks,
don't
Mary.
Worry about it. Thanks, Mary. You're good.
But like, it does feel like there's this. I mean, because it's like maybe it was a relatively new form, or at least formally it was odd, there's this interesting need to like justify it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it sounds like that's kind of the case in the Memoirs of a Catholic Girlhood too.
Yeah. But I guess I don't know. When I was reading your books, I was kind of like, "Oh, this is similar like to my writing in some ways, where I'm like looking at these like relationships and I'm kind of, you know, you're like being, yeah, the narrative is like being, you know, bad or whatever, but then kind of self-effacing and kind of toggling, you know. But then I'm just like, but then at the end, like, you know, he like leaves his, I feel like at the end of your more recent book, Cool for America, where we return to the Leslie character. And like it seemed like some kind of commentary on like just that kind of attitude of just like, you know, we have so many choices and they're just keep picking new choices, and like no one's ever gonna question it because like you'll find, you know, everything's all good. And then at the end, like, she just finds herself in this like harrowing setting where she's some guy's like, "Hey, you want to go to a wedding?" And she's like, "Sure, go to a damn wedding. I don't give a shit." Yeah. And then she gets all stoned, and then it's like starts raining, and then they're in a tent, and then like the dude she went with is just like sleeping with them, you know, hippie girl, and then she's like in the, has nowhere to sleep, and it's just like in the tent while this random guy she went to a wedding with is like, and then, you know, sleep, you know,
you tell, I lived in Montana.
Yeah. The girl's all like, "It's okay to be jealous, you know," and she's just like, "Bro," and then, but it's just like, yeah, so many options, you know, so many options. I don't know. Were you doing some commentary on the the world today, or
yeah, I mean, I feel like I worried almost with that story that there's like that it's like moralistic or something, you know, because it's sort of like, I mean, now that you're saying it, also like, right, there's like a sort of Welbeckian aspect of it where it's like
saying
this like sort of like parable of
what
like
saying
what it is to like go off and be sexually free, and then she's like kind of left like literally like soaking wet and humiliated.
That was exactly my thinking. I was like, Andrew's been so nice for two books, okay we gotta be nice sometimes, but come on, bro. And then at the end I was just like, see, this is what
yeah, maybe.
No, that's kind of what Mary McCarthy's doing to herself.
Yeah,
at the end.
Maybe it's not going to lead to happiness for Leslie. I mean, I'd like to believe that it's just a. I mean, you know, I guess like I'm of two minds, and one is that with both of those books, I was there's a very, very deliberate attempt to avoid pathologizing her or the characters in general with like. Like, it has these, like, little backstory sections for Leslie, but, like, I was adamant that they not be backstory sections that, like, reveal the trauma that made her who she is.
Right,
they're just, like, more information about what her life was like and how she became herself, but, like, I'm just very wary of the you know, I mean, everyone is now because it's been, you know, much discussed, like, the sort of trauma plot. And some books I really like do it. They like have these like backstory things that like, it's like, oh, that's why he's so messed up.
Right,
like he was abused. Like got it. Which is true. Like people are abused.
This is interesting though.
But I felt like I wanted to resist that
narrative
shorthand,
knowing the key of what.
Because I just feel like people are more complicated than that.
Yeah.
And but are still, you know, like I'm like a damaged person, but I like not nothing like there wasn't like one thing, but like just like an accumulation of life experiences like chip away at who you are, and I feel like that was more what I was trying to convey, and not that there's always just like one particular secret that sort of makes you who you are, you know.
Right. I mean, there's you know, maybe not completely pathologizing the character or pathologizing yourself. Mm-hmm. Although it's interesting with Mary McCarthy, because in the end of the book, she's literally sitting in the therapist chair and like having this dialogue and going back to her like earliest memories of her like father, like, because she has, yeah, she has the whole Catholic thing and this simultaneous like orphanhood, and which I kind of relate to the fleeing constantly into new things and trying to define yourself through other people.
Yeah.
Just also if I pathologize myself or just think of like a certain groundlessness.
And I was raised Catholic, and so I blame that on most things.
Right. Okay. You were?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
See, and I only like my friendships are almost exclusively with like Catholics and Jews, I think, because we like share a sense of like guilt and trauma around.
I think I could have used a little more guilt. Yeah. I'm trying to reinstill that into myself now. I'm reading Mary McCarthy to try to get some of her.
Because I think that is, there is like this low-key moralism in my writing that I don't intend, because I think of myself as like some like pro-libertinage, you know? But but like in reality, I think like the Catholic stuff just like never goes away.
You think there is moralism in your...
Like it, unintentional, like okay. Unconsciously the characters are always like feeling guilty about they're doing. And they're like, there's always this sense that like they're... bad behavior will like lead to some kind of punishment.
You went to Catholic school too?
I mostly did not. Mostly like just went to church and did like the Sunday school kind of thing.
I got
confirmed.
Yeah.
My uncle was a priest. My father's side of the family was like very, like they literally lived across the street from a church in like a Massachusetts mill town. And they were like, my grandmother was like a many times a week churchgoer, like that kind of old school Catholic stuff. But slowly drifted, and like after I got confirmed as a teenager, that was probably like the peak of my Catholicism, and then I was, you know, taken into the wicked ways of the secular heathen world
and kind of
left it behind. But like it never really leaves your bones. Were you raised religiously?
I was raised kind of religiously. I go to Sunday school and got confirmed and stuff, but it was just through like this kind of like Steiner, like non-denominational Christian community thing.
Oh, interesting.
So it was kind of like,
what do you get confirmed in?
What do you mean?
Like, what is the confirm? Like, it's not a Catholic confirmation. What is it? What do you say when you confirm your belief? It's like,
I don't even remember.
I believe,
man,
in like general Christianity.
I believe in the Church of Rudolf Steiner. No, I don't know.
I don't know much about Rudolf Steiner. That's interesting.
Yeah, not a lot of people do. Although somebody who I'm like, they kind of know online or messaged me online, he just wrote a long thing on Steiner for like the Gagosian or something.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I think I keep rambling about Steiner. I think it's on the pod. I'm infiltrating.
You got to get on Know Your Enemy or something and do like they do a podcast about like conservative thinkers through the ages.
Is Steiner conservative?
I don't know.
No, he's not conservative.
He's just like a, I don't know what he is.
No, he's like a, yeah, he. Yeah, my theory is that, it's gonna sound like it's wild, but it's not wild. My theory is that Steiner and Hitler, listen, just hear me out.
Yeah, yeah.
We're both trying to figure out what to do after World War One, and they went in completely opposite directions. where Hitler was like, take out everything that's not this, and Steiner was like, no, include everybody in everything.
So it's sort of like a pan religious vision.
Yeah, and also like with like, you know, people with like disabilities and except everybody can learn and like improve themselves. But I think maybe sometimes like the self improvement can be read as like from recent Wikipedia readings as I like try to dissect how I grew up. I don't, you know, I'm trying to understand my own wiring. You know, anytime you get into that kind of like, then it can be seen a little like evoed, I guess. I don't know. But I don't think it's intended like that. I think he was just, you know, coming up with new... But he also came up with biodynamic farming. So
that's cool.
He's really about the... And a lot of weird architecture, many angles.
I feel like that's the context in which I've heard of him.
The farming?
The architecture.
Architecture.
But I don't actually know. I'm truly like flying blind.
Yeah. I should probably know more about him. So you have some of that. Yeah. What did you confirm? I got a Bible with my name engraved on it. I was in the service. I was 15. I was probably wearing like a triple XL like Echo shirt. Just like, when's this?
I've been to like three Protestant church services, and I'm always like, what goes on here? I don't understand. Like, you know, like if you're not doing the Catholic Mass, like why are we here?
Like I said, I'm imposing some Catholic guilt onto my writing and myself. But so she's kind of assessing herself like that, with her shame and her. I guess it's just, you know, there's one thing to be like pathologizing the character, but then there's also on the other side, there's also an attitude towards a type of whatever, Welbeckian endless choices. And just kind of being like, and this is great, everybody, right?
Right.
There's, you know, you don't have to be pathologizing, but you also don't have to be saying.
It feels right? hard, right? I mean, like I.
For myself, from my own experience.
Yeah, well, right. If you're a human being, and like you do learn that like certain experiences will be harmful to you and hurt you, and that like all pleasure is not.
Right.
Good.
Right.
And like some things that are pleasurable hurt other people. You know, like these are all like, unless you're a sociopath, you like come to understand these things. And so there's like, I think I like have trouble sometimes as a writer because I want to create this like world in which, like, I feel like I'm noticing, especially in this new book I'm writing, like everyone is basically like bisexual. Like everyone, everyone is like sort of can fall in love with anyone.
Okay.
Like there's like all this. It's like a slightly utopian idea of like what life could be. And I think I'm like just imposing like a vision of like what would be good. And then I'm like always like, well, but then it also has to be like psychologically true to what it's like to make choices and to hurt people and whatever. And so I feel like there's always this like back and forth between like trying to make work that feels like it's almost like creating a world that's like more like the world that I like would want to imagine we live in versus like trying to depict the world as it is, you know?
Okay. So there's something in trying to make it more like the world you want it to be than just being like, and everyone here's the cold. Yeah. It's kind of like you're saying.
Because like everyone kind of has sex with each other, sort of like in the Mary McCarthy book. It's like people meet each other and then they start hooking up, which happens in life, I've been told, but like not that often in my experience. Like there's like something a little bit theatrical about it, I think, in my writing and in most writing that deals with relationships. It's sort of like makes things a little bit simpler than it is in real life.
Well, it's interesting. Yeah, it's interesting because when I even rereading some of the stories, like I'm like just the rate of like a laugh or a really just like syntactically pleasant or just like a really nice, just like enjoyable sentence. I'm like laughing and reading your book and just like having good feelings. Like I have good feelings when I read through the stories, you know, like people are making jokes. And then like, whereas I feel like I'm always like, all right, I'll give you some good feelings and then I'm going to, and this is the truth now. And I feel like there's a recurring thing in your books where like, I think one of the exes is all like writing these super violent stories that just like the past is violent. And like, I have to show you how violent it is. Yeah. And then she's like, well, maybe if it's so violent, why didn't you not go back there? Or like the, you know, there's a Cormac, there's a Blood Meridian riff in early work where he's just it's just like the gnarly shit. But
one of my friends was like, wait, do you actually think Cormac McCarthy is bad? No, the character thinks that. Like, I don't know. Jury's out for me on Cormac McCarthy.
Yeah. But that's interesting. That's interesting. I wonder, I think I might, there might be something to that, but I also feel like,
I feel like I got,
you know, tell the kids what the world really is.
Well, yeah. I mean, it was funny. Like, one of the only stories in the collection that was originally workshopped in my MFA program, and then it was like revised over like many years before I published it, is the Christopher Kidd's story about the siblings who do coke together and like have this sort of like harrowing night out
at home. Yeah.
And my teacher, who's a really great short story writer named Kevin Canty.
That one's pretty harrowing.
He was like, you gotta kill the sister. Mm. Like, man, you're like, you're not being real. You gotta kill the sister. And
keep
I was
it
like,
real, man.
I know. He's like, you gotta go all the way.
Keep
and
it
I was
real,
like, and I was like, you know, I think this is like more about
this is about you, bro.
Repetition and okay. the cycle. Yeah, yeah, you know, yeah, like yeah, it's yeah. not really like about. And that's the day my sister died. Right, I mean, you right. know, like that's a story, sure, but that's not really what that story was. But it took me years because originally it ended just like at the end of that night and that when they're in the hospital or something. And it took me years to write like the coda to that story where like a year later she like shows up at his door and she's like a mess and
exactly.
clearly like strung out.
Yeah.
Because like that, and it turned out like that's what the story's about, is about right, the fact right, that this right. is just gonna keep happening.
Right.
And that to me, but it took me like, yeah, 3 years from when I wrote the first draft to like writing that coda that made it work, I think, as
and
a story.
He pours out the whiskey and he's like, yeah, it'd just be, it's just a gesture, but
yeah, exactly.
I still do it. Yeah.
But I feel like that's the story that, I don't know. I mean, I feel like it, yeah. when you look at the whole book, it ends up being like a lot about the ways that these things that are pleasurable, especially substances, like
yeah.
actually like, do horrible things.
Well, that's
to
the thing. I mean, it can also, yeah, exactly. It's a lot about alcoholism.
Yes.
Yeah, but it's also, it can also be a, you know, I'm saying, you know, like I feel like just, yeah, just like the laughter per page rate is just very high.
Yes.
Just from the dialogue. But I think it can also, and you know, I'm saying I have a good feeling, but it can also be like, to me, the harrowing coldness of the ending can be a good feeling too, even if not, if it's not initially. I think it's just like excuse my language, but it's the scaring the hose vector.
Where please explain this.
If you go too far, like, you know, it's like you're scaring the, you know, if you go too far, then it's not good anymore. But if it's a little bit scary, it can
yeah.
be good, right?
That's the dream.
Please explain this, Sean.
No, I mean, I really loved the album I listened to maybe the most last year was the Danny Brown JPEG Mafia Stop Scaring the Hose album.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Exactly.
And I have to admit, I was like, it's a great phrase, but yeah. now you've kind of explained to me what it actually means.
Yeah.
I was just like, it's just a great thing to yell.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I forgot that they called them that. Yeah. The legend Peggy, dude.
That album is wild. It's really bracing and ugly. And
yeah,
I love it.
I love JPEG Mafia, and I like Danny Brown a lot too. That's maybe scared me a little bit too. That combination seems scary.
It's hard to listen to. Like you can do like two or three songs at a time, and you're just like, and then you really need a break.
Yeah,
like
it's
really a lot of information.
Yeah, it's
coming
a lot of
at
yeah,
you.
Yeah.
A lot of aggression. But it's really fucking good.
Yeah. But you know, if
but
you,
no, that's
if
right.
you get a little bit scared, you know, it can be some cold truths about you know how things could be can be calming as a reader. I find.
But I feel like I right, for better or worse, I feel like one of my goals as a writer is like a kind of elegance.
Yes,
and so
that's what I read. That's what I read your books for. I'm like, all right, write some nice write some nice or like write yeah
but I think but the like the downside of that is like right like our friend Lee Johnson, like I think his book Nitro Mountain is like
yeah.
one of the best books of like the last decade, and why it's good is cuz he just goes as far as you can go into like the darkest, most horrible shit imaginable. There's just like this like literally like a guy who's like huffing paint fumes, like, you know, like with like taxidermy hanging off of his car, like
God
trying
damn.
To murder people, and you're just like
yeah.
like this is like, you know, the
yeah.
stuff of true nightmares. And I feel like I haven't quite gone there, and I'm not sure I can go there as a writer.
Yeah.
Part of me wishes I had a little more of that in me.
Yeah.
Or even if just to be like in your work or other people who are writing stuff that is called more explicitly autofiction, like a willingness to be really ugly on the page, which
right.
which I do admire in
right.
writers. And I think it's something that requires you to like put away your vanity a little bit.
Right.
You know?
Well, it's interesting. Cause yeah, I think with when there is a kind of, you know, theme or like a, Yeah, when the whole book is kind of trying making a statement of something, like how my first book was, where it's like, then it's sort of like the beats are there for you of like the self ugliness, mm-hmm. like kind of where there is a remove just because of what it's titled, you know, and it's like I'm only,
yeah.
But then
yeah.
like when I don't really have that kind of riff to lean on, then that's why like the challenge of really articulating the nuances of certain scenarios and all the sides of it is what I feel like Mary McCarthy does so well.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy the degree to which she, when I was just rereading it on the train on the way here, just like the way she captures thought, like the like sort of self-negating
yeah.
way that people kind of think and bend back on themselves yeah. and think through things. It's really amazing, and I think it's very hard to actually do in a way that feels like you're showing revelation
right.
and moving forward and not just ruminating on the right, same stuff right, over right. and over again, which I think at like its worst, the depiction of thought is just like, because obviously real thought is repetitive, but she kind of makes it new.
Yeah.
Each paragraph feels like it's like advancing some kind of sense of the character
within one sentence, like
yeah
like being, you know, kind of like repulsed by something and then that makes it better or something, like
right.
one line early on where she was like it was just yeah the revulsion somehow made it more, she's talking about the affair, like made it more like,
and then there's like this horrible there's like, these damn. Moments that are just devastating where she's like, and then there's like this like panic of being just a young couple trying to entertain themselves on a Saturday night.
Yeah.
Like just like this sort of like cold panic of boredom, of like yeah, realizing exactly. you've like made a mistake and like having to sort of justify it somehow by having fun. Right. That felt so real.
Damn. Yeah. Yeah. I don't have any, yeah.
Well, I mean, and characters in this book are also just like always retreating into drink, right. as just like something to push away whatever bad feelings they have or whatever they've just done. There's ones where he's like, take it like medicine, yeah. Margie or Margaret or whatever.
On the damn train?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're no, just that like, was, oh, that boy.
Was
my,
that was, yeah, the emotional turns in that story. Like, they're just drinking, getting drunk. Then she wakes up and she realizes they slept together. She's like crying. She can't find her sock. And then they have a drink and they're happy again. And then out of nowhere, he's like, go take a bath. And she just moods all weird. She's like, what? Like, okay. And then she goes and takes a bath. And while she's taking a bath, there's one paragraph where she's having all these different feelings about what's going on, you know? And suddenly she's like, you know what? This is like a political thing. Like, this is like capitalism. Like, he's capitalism. And he's making me. And I was just like, bruh. It's scary. It scared me. This book is scary. Because she doesn't even know how she's feeling. And it's changing from minute to minute. And then she has parts where she's kind of saying, like, I didn't want to sleep with him, but then I... She's like, yeah. It's just, man.
But then it's like, I feel like the thing that...
It. Yeah.
The cool thing about that story, too, is then the, like, kind of long coda, right, after they have their, like, kind of affair on the train... He like kind of keeps courting her, but it gets more and more like half-assed over yeah. the years. And he like shows up and like makes a pass at her, and she has to like kind of fight him off. And it's like, even though she kind of thought about just giving in, I mean, it's really, it's brutally honest, you know? The fact that he gets sort of more and more conservative towards her. And at the end, you know, after her father dies, he sends her this telegram like, that was the most important relationship you'll ever have. And just like, you imagine like some like ex. I was like, fuck you.
Yeah.
You don't know me.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't know my father.
Yeah, a lot of father. Yeah. She's like, she fought him off, though she had an inclination to yield, if only to reestablish her ascendancy over him.
Yeah. Right? There was something I just read. I can't remember now. I was like, I'm always reading too many things at once. So there was something about how, like, forgiveness. It was actually this podcast about Guantanamo Bay that just started happening by the serial people.
Okay.
And there's like something about how one of the Guantanamo Bay prisoners has like sort of like made it his. his like thing to like forgive the guards, and he's even like hung out with one of the guards, and he sort of has like a public platform all about forgiveness. And the woman on the podcast says like, well, but the thing about forgiveness is it is a power move in a way, because it's implying that like you have the power to forgive because someone has done something to you. And there's like almost something in that McCarthy line, right? About like she almost was like willing to let him do something terrible to her so that she could have the higher ground.
Right. But don't you understand how
Which is devastating, right?
Right. It's devastating.
She doesn't do it, you know, right, but it crosses her mind, and it's interesting.
Right. Yeah. She stifled her vanity to not get her. Yeah, damn. But yeah. Man. No, it's there's some weird coincidences. And then she was also, I guess she was also really good friends with Hannah Arendt.
Yeah, they have. Again, I'm always like reading things secondhand, but I read a great essay about their correspondence, and there's a whole book of their letters to each other. Tony Jett wrote a great essay about their correspondence.
Yeah. Damn.
No, she's like, I mean, you can just like, and I think this is like something that you either like or you don't. Like there is a like her, it's very intellectual, the fiction, right? Like it's more thought based than feeling based in a way, right? It's like everything, every emotion is like almost like essayized within the stories. Yeah. And I think that some people, I think, have found fault with her work in that it's like can be. There's a collection in this Library of America that I haven't read yet called Cast a Cold Eye. And I was thinking about how that's surely like some self-referential thing that like she casts a cold eye over everything.
Okay.
And like, there's a sense in which she, the critic or something, which I think she's an incredible critic. And I see it in some of my, like, and I'm a critic, and a lot of my writer friends are like critics and writers, that like it can be hard to like find the balance between one's like critical intellectual apparatus and like the thing that you need for fiction, which is like kind of stupider in a way. Yeah.
How do you feel about Faulkner?
I mean, I love his best stuff, but he's not like one of my like deep all time guys.
Yeah.
I think maybe because I'm not a Southerner. Maybe sure. That's part of it.
Yeah.
But I also I find him very difficult. And I think partly like most of the books that mean the most to me, this almost feels embarrassing to say, are kind of about like their characters are more intellectual.
Yeah.
And like Faulkner's people are not intellectual.
Right,
except
right.
for poor Quentin, who I deeply relate to and love.
I was doing the Easter weekend Sound of the Fury.
Really?
Reread.
Is that a thing?
Well, so it's set over Easter weekend.
Yeah,
you know?
That's
so it's
amazing.
Like, but then
are you
going
to write about that?
I should.
Yeah.
I should.
There's
but
your
I
next was, Paris Review essay.
But you know what's weird? True. But you know what's weird is the Quentin chapter is like on Thursday, if you know the dates.
That's Maundy Thursday.
It's Maundy Thursday from years before. And then if I was reading it, I realized that. And then I reread it, you know, and it's all the memory of Caddy and his sister and the thing that happened, you know. And I reread it through that angle. And I think, you know, I was in a pretty, insane state when I was reading, but I'm pretty sure everything checks out. I'm pretty sure it's because there's the perfume stuff, you know, the Mary Magdalene stuff, and it's the honey.
I mean,
anyway,
I wouldn't put it past him.
And then he dies at the end of it. But it was interesting. You're totally right. Like going back, I was going back and forth between that and this, and in a way, they're similarly.
It's crazy that they're contemporaries.
They're contemporaries.
They feel like they're like writing in like different worlds.
Right. But even that section particularly is looking at this like, maybe it's pretty, it's different, but it's, you know, there's some kind of like, you know, illicit crossing, boundary crossing, you could say.
Yeah.
But it's just so, everything is just so exactly that, like belligerent in scene. And then, yeah, the Mary McCarthy will, a thing will happen, and then she'll look at, you know, three sides of it in the most elegant way. But there's still, I think, because it's so surrounding those type, and with your writing, and no matter how, you know, clean it is, just language wise, it is always looking at
kind of like emotional situation, you know, feeling situations.
You gotta hope there's something. I mean, I feel like this stuff's not gonna work unless there's like something like real.
That's how I feel
at the bottom of it, you know.
A feeling. Yeah.
Because I mean, I can't even. I mean, I feel like most of the stuff that people really care about, I can't even think of one that I love that like doesn't have like something actually at its heart. I mean, I guess like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's critics I really love who, you know, who don't write fiction, but if the fiction's going to work, it has to have some like true core of something.
Yeah.
Hard and kind of dark. And
yeah. Damn. Yeah. I didn't know you were Catholic.
I know. Well, I've pushed it all away.
Yeah, you pushed it all away.
I've tried to run away as far away from it as possible. But you know, I'm married to another Catholic, so you know, you can only do so much. You're always drawn back.
I guess this was also there was an autofiction element to the early. I guess it's clearly. How do you feel about that question of like, is anyone writing stuff that's not grounded in something, or are you trying to look at? Yeah, I don't know. That's a dumb question. I don't want to.
You want to do that? You want to open up the Pandora's box of autofiction?
I don't want to go there. I guess it's like what you're saying. If there isn't a core feeling, or
is Mary McCarthy autofiction? You know, it's like it's clearly like all and people like sued her, I think, because like all these characters are real people. Like she just like took stuff straight out of her life. She changed nothing about the guy and the young intellectual. I can't remember who he is, but it's just like it's just a guy that she knew.
I was just talking to someone about this the other day, and they're kind of like if you're hearing this, I love you. But he was like going, you know, I did like the autofiction thing. And now I want to write something that's completely not autofiction. And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, you know, like dates of when I did this and when I did that. And I'm like, well, that doesn't mean, it doesn't have to be like dates, like on this day I did that. Because like in Portrait of an Intellectual, the first like 15 pages are just about this guy, Jim, who works at a magazine. And she's like painting this portrait of this guy and the nuances of the levels of liberalism at the time.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Pre-World War II. And then 15 pages in, a new woman comes into the office to get a job there. And her name's Margaret.
Yeah.
And you're like, whoa. And she's like, and he just gets married, is describing like his wife and how people look at, and then the rest of it is just, and she's describing herself, like, you know, he tries to rush into her at the end, and she's like, she looked just strained and just trying to be kind to him.
I know. She's like, oh, honey.
Yeah.
Like, you quit. You shouldn't have quit for me.
Yeah,
basically.
Yeah. No, man. But like, just
he thought he was doing like a Jerry Maguire.
Yeah.
Move, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think what you're saying, or like what that's making me think about, is like, I think that like the whole like the autofiction debate, the only problem I have with it is that it's limiting, because like
it's inane.
Right, because it's like, if you think like, obviously you should draw on your experience of the world, but I think like this book is such a great example because she does it from five different angles, six different angles, and like, and I was just talking to Laura the other day about like, I'm trying to write a new book and I want the style to be like looser and more sort of modernist in a way, like to just do more with language. And like, to me, almost the way to do that is to use stuff that's even more real, because if I just, if the subject matter is known to me, then I can play with the language in ways that are, then like it almost like frees me to not worry about like what's going to happen next.
Okay,
because
yeah.
I can like, I know what happens. Like I'm writing about like a 13-year-old who's like basically me, and like his mother, who's basically my mother. And it's like, I don't need to like make that much up, but I can like within those consciousnesses play a lot more freely if I'm not as worried about like, is there going to be a twist? Is, you know, whatever.
Right,
like,
right,
you know.
Right. Because the mining. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, I mean, it's like something like working on your piece about your walk across the country.
Right.
It's like, we're not changing what happened,
right,
but you're constantly like thinking about what angle you're taking on
exactly
that experience. And that is the interesting part more
right
than the thing itself. Like
right
a lot of people have done road trips right of various kinds. So the point isn't the subject matter
right
so much as like what you're doing with
right
it.
But you're saying you want to go more kind of modernist or more.
I feel that need, like this new book that I'm almost finished with is like really, I feel, it feels to me like kind of a culmination of what I'm doing with the first two books. It's kind of like almost like the deluxe version of those two books where it's
whoa
like, I don't know, like two different couples and one single woman. And it's like showing how they get through like 2.5 years of life, basically.
Whoa.
So it kind of feels like it's like early work plus Cool for America or something.
Nice.
But the style, I think it's, you know, God willing, like an advance emotionally and artistically, but I also think I feel like I like need to like discover new modes.
That's exactly,
you know,
how I feel. I feel like that's what's more, yeah, that's how I feel, where it's like, yeah, the mode is the story. The mode is what makes it the story. Like, and if the style is interesting, it's literally irrelevant what it's, I don't know. It's messed up because I wrote a thing that was like, I was like, it was like reverse autofiction, where it's like pretending to be autofiction, but it's like, I'm not going around the world, you know, viewing myself or just telling one, you know, version of myself. That's like the trick, but it's like, no one got the trick. Everyone's like, right? Because it's like, oh, here's this date. I'm doing this on this day.
Right.
Right. But that isn't like.
Even if you told the story of one day, you'd have to be so selective that you couldn't, it wouldn't be the truth.
Right. Yeah. Right. But I'm saying it's like,
and also it's fiction.
It's presented like that. No, but I guess what I was going to say was like around the end, it just gets so formally crazy where she's like in the, she's in the damn therapist's office, and then there's just these long. Yeah, this book. Yeah, she's doing. I think there is. I guess the. I think there is the reason why I was all, you know, triggered with how nice you were and how great Leslie was in all the books is like, I think there is a bit of a strain where there is no. I mean, she is really self. She bears it all.
Flagellating.
Yeah, self-flagellating, right? Like, and it's not even like she's self-flagellating. I have it all figured out, like. And let me show you, like, it seems like she's really earnestly digging in and like, you know, these memories of, yeah, just with her, yeah, her father is young, you know, like she's like, I don't know. I feel like that's an important component for any person trying to write. I don't know. Maybe I'm just, you know, a little bit, you know, if yeah, I feel like it's a little bit unbalanced where like I have to completely be so self-flagellating for anyone to accept the story. But then if there's stories out there that are, they're just like generally, I mean, they could be good, they could be bad, but there shouldn't be any like view of the world that everyone unanimously agrees is good. Right. That's
no,
not,
exactly.
That doesn't make for good art either. I feel like,
but like, I mean, it's funny because like a good friend of mine just sent me his manuscript. He's like literally my one of my oldest friends. And so I was reading it, and it's like, what's very funny about reading it is like, you know, like there's like a version of me that's a character, there's a version of my partner that's a character, they're like, you know, the main character is like a really ugly version of him. And my like notes in the margins are like, oh, like I don't know, man, I don't know if you can like say that, like that's really
about
like
about him or about you.
No, about like
him.
The him character's like some of his like comments about women and stuff are
okay,
just like really gross, and it's like, but that's how this character thinks about the world. And I think I don't feel burned by it, but it's like the two books I have in the world, you know, did get a lot of criticism, both, I mean, not as much from like legit critics, though occasionally, but often among like the like just regular readers that like the characters are unlikable, that they're not nice, that they're that you hate them all, that like they're all too whatever, like that they're all assholes to each other, they're all overly intellectual and shitty to each other. And I was like, I thought I was like sort of like pulling my punches a little bit about these people. It's like, if you know the real versions of like the way that the people in this world actually treat each other, man, like you got another thing coming. Like, I, you know, and so it's like, what do you, there is like a bizarre thing at loose in the world about niceness and like wanting everyone to be nice. And, it's like what I don't like is that I can feel that a little bit's absorbed into me where like, even when I'm reading stuff, I'm like flinching and like worrying about like I'm worrying on behalf of my friend about how other people will see his like ugly character, even though I think that's like a very legitimate thing to do and like part of life that should be depicted is like all the like ugly thoughts that particularly men in this case have, you know, when they're like walking through the world. But like literally the first thing the guy in early work says is like, like most people, I'm not an asshole to most people I meet because I'm like trying to be part of like the mainstream of society. And so that's like the hint that like you're not getting the whole truth, you know?
Damn. How does early work end again? I wanted to look because so he leaves his girlfriend and then goes and then Leslie gets with his friend, right?
Well, there's like there's a lot of angst about whether or not they did or not, but
okay.
But then eventually,
I feel like
he
there's one final turn.
Yeah,
I
well, so he
find
and,
my book. It's took it, dude.
Well, there's all these.
I know who it is.
The camera can't see it, but there's a lot of books in this room.
There are.
So it might be in one of these piles.
No, it's. I went through. I was going. I wasted. Yeah, I took a two. Hard 90, just going through everything.
Hard 90.
Yeah.
Well, so at the very end, I know this because I've just been adapting it into a script, so I've read the book 20 times lately.
Dang.
They decide, because they're bored, basically, that they'll go to Montana,
okay,
even though she didn't get the job she wanted there. And so then, like, the last little section of the book is that, like, she's kind of, like, actually, like, disciplining herself and, like, writing her book in Montana, and he's, like, still out at the bars, and we kind of end on her like deciding not to go to the bar and staying home and like writing her book.
Okay.
So it
interesting.
Kind of,
interesting.
My whole idea was that it would be sort of like her building's Roman in the end, like not his.
Right. Okay. No, I remember. I remember my whole face getting hot. Like, right? I was like, wow, you're going to say this about society? And then she's going to just home like this? Like, come on, dude. And then I remember it. I calmed down. My like heart rate went. I was like, all right, that was really triggering me.
You're saying I shouldn't stay in the bar?
Yeah. No, I think, no, the end was good. I was like, okay, good. It's not, Okay. Damn, now I forgot why I had so much significance, but I had some significance. Yeah, nice. So how's that going? You're doing a script, movie script for it?
Yeah, I co-wrote it with this director who really likes the book, which was really fun. And the most bizarre part of my life is that we wrote it and there's a producer who wants to do it, and I know that like you can't count on these people at all, and so who knows if it'll ever happen, but like you know, they're like sending it out to like famous actresses now to like read it and be like, you know, so
who's gonna play Leslie?
Well, that's the million dollar question.
I know who is.
Who?
I always imagine some version of is it Olivia Wilde?
Oh, well, that would be great. I don't know
who I'm thinking of. I gotta look. I'm pretty sure. Who's gonna play her?
We sent the script to Zendaya.
Nice.
I'm not even joking.
Nice.
That would be incredible. I think like someone like Saoirse Ronan would be great. You know, she's always playing writers.
Okay, nice.
I just want someone who will get this project funded and made.
Nice.
I mean, there's like it's like, you know, they show. I mean, I have very little say in any of this, but like, you know, the guy who's directing it, we're like buds. So he like sends me all the like casting stuff, and it's, you know, like the 20, 30 of like the best actresses in the world. I'm like, any of them would be amazing. Like any like amazing professional actor, I mean, my, you know, would be incredible.
Nice.
I have, but I also like, I don't know. I feel like, I think we wrote a really good script, but I also know there's like at least a 60% chance the movie will just be really different and weird, and you know that it just like won't be what I imagined it would be, and I think that's okay. The book is the book.
Yeah.
If yeah. they ever make it, which
you're
is
like a, you're like the character in the magazine story when he just starts writing for the magazine, and he's like he says he's gonna write his great book, and then he's just like, well, the essays I wrote for Time, I guess you're saying, is life, or is it life?
Yeah,
they weren't really my writing anymore, and that was okay.
I mean, that's the great danger of all this stuff we have to do to make enough money to write our books, right?
Yeah.
Is that you waste your life writing stuff you don't care that much about.
Do you feel like fatherhood is changing your writing?
I mean, it's certainly making me have to do more with less time. Yeah. which is not a bad thing, honestly.
I think I need less time.
Maybe you need less time.
I think I have too much time right now. I'm getting less time.
For like the last 6 months, you know, I was like doing the baby stuff, working at the Paris Review, like trying to finish this novel, trying to write this screenplay, like teaching. It was like, but in a way, it's just like you kind of turn into a machine, and you're just like, all right, I'm like gonna like I've got an hour, and I'm gonna like write this fucking scene. I don't know. I do think it's made me. It's given me perspective.
Yeah.
I think it's inevitable. And, like the new book is like kind of about that. Like it's like most of it's about like couples, like during like the kind of pandemic years, for lack of a better word, and like all their shit and their like hangups and whether to get married and what kind of sex they're having and who they want to be having sex with. And then like there eventually there's a baby involved, and the character like kind of has this revelation that like a lot of this stuff didn't matter that much. But I think that's the kind of revelation that is, it's like an acid trip revelation where like it fades away, and because then you're back to like wanting all the things you wanted before there was a baby. Like, you still have the same relationship conflicts and desires and you know, struggles. And like he's in that like first glow after the baby, and I feel like I was there for like the first like 6 months. I was like, this is what my life was all leading up to, was this, and like this is my purpose in life. And I still like, I mean, I love this baby, and he's like my favorite thing that's ever happened in the world, but. Like, all the old stuff is still there. I'm still me. I'm still, like, struggling with all the same stuff.
Yeah.
But I think, like, subject matter-wise as a writer, it's like, oh, suddenly you have, like, access to, like, what your parents might have been thinking. Instead of, like, you're no longer just able to, like, for me, I've always only been able to inhabit, like, the kid perspective. And suddenly it's like, oh, right. Like, the person who's the person of responsibility.
Inhabiting the father perspective. Yeah, because you got that father story.
There is the one, yeah.
And,
Which took me a long, long time to write.
Yeah, some of the... yeah, that's a funny-ass story. Yeah, dating the older woman. All the mommy stuff in there had me dying. Yeah, you kind of are a sex writer, I think.
It's, you know, like... It's funny.
People think I'm a sex writer, but I'm actually an anti-sex writer. That's what people don't understand.
There's not actually that much sex in your book.
There's barely. Yeah, there's a lot of.
There's a lot of trying to, wishing.
Yeah, or deflecting. Yeah.
Well, I've always wanted to like. I feel like there's actually like kind of a, what's the word? There's like some economic term for it. There's like a market opening for people to write. Honestly and interestingly about sex. I don't think that many people do it, you know?
Yeah.
And like, I'm just so interested. And I think it's like a part, like, to, you know, if you're not being like overly, not doing it to write it porny or something, to like try to like understand like what it is that goes on in people's lives. Yeah. And like, it's just part of it.
Yeah.
The new book is pretty sex obsessed.
Yeah,
the one that I'm readying for a publisher.
Okay,
but
the best story is, yeah, I mean, I guess it, what is it, the title story is so fun, so good, dude.
The first story I ever published. It was Cool for America. Yeah,
what do you mean, before early work?
Yeah, I published that story in 2013 in the Paris Review. It was my first publication. Yeah.
Did you blast your tibula like that or no?
No, but a friend of mine did. We were playing. That was in Prospect Park. We were playing soccer, and he, I saw it happen, and it was like one of the most gnarly, disturbing dude. Things I've ever seen. And he's still like, "Where's my royalties for that story? Like you hilarious. stole my trauma.
Hilarious. You stole my trauma. Damn.
No, it was so horrible.
Damn.
And I was like, immediately took it. I was like, I'm taking that.
Yeah. Yeah. Damn. But you were saying earlier, for my own, you were saying there's something about like the trauma plot being like tired or something like that. What did you mean by that?
I mean, just feeling like, I mean, it is, you know, and Peril Sagal wrote that essay about it in the New Yorker a couple years ago.
Oh, she did?
Like, yeah, that's all I'm paraphrasing basically, but, and you know, she uses as examples too, like literally every like shitty mainstream movie is now like the backstory of like how someone became the villain or something. You know, it's like even things like, you know, there was like a movie about like how the villain from Sleeping Beauty became an evil witch or something. It's like we have to know like everybody's trauma,
right,
and it's like that's like
right,
the only
right,
possible
right.
way we can like understand the stories of ourselves. And
right.
it's not that it's not often true, but it is limiting.
Right.
And I think it's like self-limiting. And I mean, the example that everyone always cites is that Hana Yanagihara book, A Little Life, which just is like endless, like horrifying
right.
things.
But she's kind of explaining her characters. She's
right.
kind of like saying she's like playing God, kind of.
Yeah, but she's, I mean, like the whole book is like the long explanation of like why Jude is like unable to live.
Okay.
Right? I mean, it's like because he was like, first he was raped by this person,
right,
then he
right,
was raped
right.
by the priests, then he was thrown down the stairs,
right,
then he was
right.
whatever. And so like as it's sort of like an accumulation of horrors, almost making an argument for like why he should kill himself, basically.
Right, right. But I mean, at the end of, but if you're doing it to yourself, for searching for yourself, it's kind of, but I mean, at the
I mean,
end,
it's part of like the experience of being a therapized person, right? Is that you're like inevitably like searching through your past for like what made you who you are. I'm not saying it's not legitimate.
Right,
I just think there's like more and less elegant ways to do it.
Right.
And we've like sort of settled lately for this like trope of like this particular thing caused this particular thing
right,
later
right.
in life, which I think is just oversimplifying.
Yeah.
You know?
Some time might pass and it won't even be true anymore.
You what?
Or some time might pass and then that story you wrote of your life is like not true anymore.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, that's like luckily, hopefully why you get like bunch of chances at it. Like
yeah.
every book you write or every piece you write, you're like hopefully going a little deeper or figuring out who
right.
you are in that moment.
Because that's kind of what she says at the end of this, where she's kind of like, it seems like she says all this stuff and then she's like, and that's why, I don't know, there's some suicide stuff, like that's why I should, anyway.
I mean, it reminds me a little bit of like The Golden Notebook by Doris Lessing, which is one of my
okay.
favorite books.
Okay.
And I mean, I feel like these are all books like under the shadow of psychoanalysis, you know, where it's like trying to like figure out all the things that like make a person who they are. And that book is like very explicit about all these different lives the one woman has had and like who she is in all these different times and places of her life. And you know, the idea is there's like, she's got like a red notebook, a black notebook, a green notebook for different phases of her life. And they
okay.
all have like sort of different versions of her. And then they all come together in
oh.
the golden notebook,
oh, okay.
Which is, you know, a bit trite when I say it like that, but it really works as a book in the book. but I mean, I feel like that's like the really complex version of the trauma plot, which is like what you want from a novel is the like, something that makes you see the full breadth of what makes a person who they are, like Proust or something, you
right,
know,
right.
Or even, you know, Knausgård, where you don't, you maybe don't have to like say everything that ever happened to you, but like,
yeah, like, yeah, yeah. No, I find that's, I found that, 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 that's more interesting is like, instead of like confessing the story, like proposing a bunch of different stories.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's also probably a, like a healthier way to go through the world. If you like, I don't know, if you have like one story you're sure of.
Well, it seems like it, it can be a real trap.
It's kind of, yeah. Or it's like, yeah, it's like saying everything somebody else's fault. It's the temptation is to say something's everybody else's fault or everything's your fault. And they're both equally myopic kind of.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
Right. And they neither like gives you much opportunity to grow. Or, you know, you can choose one of those explanations, but then it's like, all right, well then now what? Yeah. You have to keep being a person, you know, you have to like find a way to advance in the world, at least to stay alive if that's your goal.
Right. Right. Yeah. No, I guess. Yeah. Yeah. The fact that she, her childhood was so gnarly like that makes it seem like, yeah, I like that she exposes all the stuff about her childhood and stuff and like kind of offers herself up as like a canvas of like how someone can understand something about the world.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think the way that the book works, that it like shows you all these examples of how she's behaving first and then proffers possible explanations for how those things came about is way more interesting than the other way around. You know, it almost goes backwards in a way. I'm reading this really strange book that I love right now called Manhood by Michelle Lyris. And it's kind of like proto Knausgård, or I mean, he's like post Proust and pre Knausgård. And it's like this very like essayistic book where he's trying to like explore like what made him the man he is.
Okay.
And it's like a lot of analysis of like his like childhood memories and like of like plays he saw as a child or like images he saw and like what those things meant to him. And doing kind of like close readings of like almost like texts from his childhood.
Damn.
It's a really cool book.
It's from a while ago.
Yeah, it was published in 1939.
Okay.
But there was a Richard Howard translation in the 70s maybe. And I'd been looking for it for a while cause I read it. I read some of it like in a, read a residency. And I've been like looking for it ever since. And then I found it in Unnameable Books the other day. So
damn.
Really, shout out to the greatest bookstore in Brooklyn.
Damn. Are you writing reviews of stuff, or is that a thing you do consistently, or like?
I do it a lot, yeah. And I feel like I've done it for years. But this is.
Did you write something about Bolaño a while ago?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's one of my favorite writers ever.
Nice.
And that, yeah, it was a New York Review piece where I had to read every Bolaño book.
You did, so. Dude. I think that was back in the day when Harold was gassing your book to me right when I moved to New York, and I was like doing the like, I was like, oh yeah, he's writing about the same thing I'm writing, whatever. And I think I saw that you had written a blind thing. I was like, oh, whatever.
So, I wrote about Zambra. I wrote about Eisenberg. I wrote about all of our people.
Yeah.
But
nice.
But this is like weirdly the like longest stretch I've maybe gone in like my adult life without doing much criticism.
Yeah.
I think it's okay. I think I need a little break.
You're tapping into your second phase.
Yeah. I'm doing the
novelist mode.
Well, and I want to like, I mean, for so many years I did it cause it was like A, obviously is like a good chunk of money, and B, like, you know, like kind of wanting to stay in the game. Like, you know, I like criticism a lot, but then at a certain point you're like pitching something that's going to take you like 2 months to write. And it's like, I'd rather, I don't have infinite time. Like I used to have more time. And now I realized, you know, like between that story collection coming out and now, like mostly what I've published is criticism, which I care about a lot, but I don't want that to be like the only thing I do. So,
yeah. And you've been in New York for a minute?
Yeah, I went to Columbia and then I lived here for years afterwards, but then I was on like a tour of the country for like a decade. I lived in Montana and Virginia and Boston, and then Laura and I moved back to Brooklyn in 2019.
Okay.
And
right before the pandemic.
Yeah, she's a hospitalist, and so she we got here just in time for her to be like the frontline like COVID ward doctor. Damn. And it was insane.
Damn.
Like, she was running a hospice unit for COVID patients. She was running a long-term COVID recovery ward.
Damn,
like,
really?
she was like really in the shit. Like, as deep in it as you can get.
What were you doing?
I was hanging out at home. I was walking the dog.
Yeah, you're walking the dog.
I was worrying.
Yeah, reading all of Anya.
Going back to my Catholic roots.
Yeah, damn, dude.
I was worrying because my book was supposed to come out.
Didn't it come out in 2020?
It came out in July 2020, and it was just like,
damn.
It did not feel like the most important thing in the world.
Damn.
Much to my chagrin.
Yeah, you're damn.
It was very sad. You know, that was the worst thing about the whole pandemic, I'd say, is that my book didn't get the attention
that was the
it deserved.
Thing. Yeah. That was the worst thing. Damn. Well, shoot. I gotta fucking pee so bad.
Great.
You wanna kill this?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Okay, awesome.
Don't you have to do an ad or something?
Yeah, I gotta do a BetterHelp ad, or maybe we got more on us, but maybe not. I gotta pee real quick.